Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll talk about what the Raptors being eliminated could mean for the Miami Heat this summer.
Then we'll take a look at some coaching changes from around the league, including former Heat assistant Stan Van Gundy parting ways with the Pistons. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation, allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for Fanside, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
On today's show, we'll talk about what the Heat can learn from the success the Celtics are having in the postseason. And then we'll take a look at some head coaching changes in Detroit and in Charlotte. But first, let's talk about the now eliminated Toronto Raptors and play a game of true or false, David.
Sounds good.
So let's get right into it. True or false, it's time for the Raptors to blow it up.
This is a tougher one to answer because my personal feelings, as many of our listeners probably could guess, is that I feel like they should stay consistent. They've built a good, solid team. You don't know what's going to happen with the status of LeBron James. However, at the same time, there are teams like the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics that are up and coming. So you look at the window for the Raptors, and many people were advocating blowing it up last year. They had a great regular season. They faltered in the playoffs, as you can imagine, having been swept by LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So what to do next? You know, again, to me personally, I feel like they should keep it. But I'm going to go about face here and say it's time to blow it up. Like, they're not going to advance. They're not going to do anything with this roster. They're bloated on a number of positions. They're overpaying Serge Ibaka. Kyle Lowry is not getting any younger. DeMar DeRozan pretty much choked in the playoffs. So I think it's time to move on from what they currently have in their rosters. I think we're getting the sense that a lot of teams are going to be desperate to shake things up over the summer, Miami included. So this is a great opportunity to cash in on some weak perceptions there from Toronto's GM.
You know, I can't believe what's about to happen here, but I disagree with you.
Yeah, all right.
I don't think that they should blow it up. I think that they should just keep what they got. Look, this is a team that won 59 games this season. A franchise record, and it doesn't matter if you disappoint in the playoffs and get swept by Cleveland the way they did. I look at that series, and yes, we talked about this at length on Locked On NBA on Tuesday. It was a disappointing series. You can't be excited about it if you're a Raptors fan, but they went to overtime in game one. They blew that game. LeBron James hit a buzzer beater to beat them in game three, and you just, man, it, yeah, they got swept, but like, they were right there in two of those games.
They were still going to lose the series, though.
But it's also like, I feel like people are reacting strongly because they got swept. Had this been a six game series and the Raptors lost 4-2, I don't think people would be reacting as strongly as they are right now.
How about this? Right? Again, Lowry's not getting any younger, right?
No.
The ceiling on DeRozan, you know, he didn't attempt a single three-pointer against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, the book is out on what to do with DeRozan. He's going to get to the line a lot. He's going to put up a couple floaters. He's got that nice post game. He can turn around and shoot the jumper. But, you know, he's limited in what he can do offensively. He's not going to expand. Valanciunas already took a step up, and that's about as far as he'll go. And as Dwayne Casey realized, sometimes it's more effective to put him coming off the bench. And you're also stuck with Serge Ibaka. So what do you have to look forward to? I mean,
I think you've got – instead of blowing it up, I do think you got to try to move Ibaka, specifically Ibaka. Look, I don't want to compare it to the Spurs, but I'm going to compare it to the Spurs. Okay. You look at, you know, if the way Kawhi Leonard was able to burst for them, and that led them to getting another finals win. I mean, that led them to another championship that wasn't there before with a over the hump Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili. The Kawhi popping is what helped them. Now, can OG Anunoby do that? I don't know. Can Pascal Siakam do that? Maybe. I mean, those guys are both high ceiling guys. You just got to make the room. Like the Spurs, they had to trade Richard Jefferson to make room for Kawhi Leonard, right? To let him blossom. You've got to do things like that. Now, I think what you were about to say was much easier said than done in the trade Ibaka, But the Raptors still have a bunch of their draft picks. They can attach a bunch of them to move Ibaka's deal to another tanking team, because as we know, there are going to be tanking teams next year, and they might be willing to take on Ibaka's two more years after this season if it means that they could get a couple draft picks. Now, Toronto does owe their 2018 pick to Brooklyn, but they could trade a 2020 pick. They could trade any amount of second-rounders. They only owe a 2018 second-rounder to Phoenix, so they could trade. They still have plenty of picks that they can move. And maybe you do that, or maybe you pair Ibaka with a Bebe Nuguera or a Jakob Poeltl or a DeLon Wright. Maybe, you know, those younger players that might not have those high ceilings but could still have value to a rebuilding team.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can move Ibaka. And I do think that people – you know I'm very anti-Serge Ibaka, but I still think that the NBA – like Serge Ibaka is the next – he's like the next Jeff Green to me. It's like there's still a couple more years of teams talking themselves into Serge Ibaka before they realize that he's a minimum contract player.
That's a pretty steep drop-off.
That's what he is. He's not good. He lost – he single-handedly lost game four for the Raptors. Anyway, like he – but I just don't see, unless you're able to, like, if you rebuild Toronto, like, what are you rebuilding? Like, I don't see it, you know? You also have to wait for LeBron's decision. If he leaves to the Western Conference, things open up completely.
I don't know. Is the Toronto team is currently constructed capable of knocking off the Celtics at full strength with Kyrie and Gordon Hayward back? Are they
sure
going to be able?
Yeah.
Really?
As long as they don't have to play LeBron, I think they're fine.
Factor that LeBron.
Yes, they have completely gotten into their heads with LeBron James. I think that is a major factor.
I'm
not saying they're the favorites. I'm just saying they have a much better chance. They're not going to get swept by Boston.
I'll give you that, absolutely. And to your point, though, however, the Indiana Pacers from the Big Three era, the Chicago Bulls from the Big Three era, you want to go back even further. I mean, today on a thread that we're both on, there were so many teams that have fallen apart at the hands of LeBron James at one point or another in his, you know, what is it, 15-year career now. Is the Toronto Raptors, are they just going to be remembered for being just one of many teams that just couldn't get past the LeBron-sized hump? I mean, is that what they want in LeBron? I mean, Toronto? LeBron's
no.
I was going to say. No, LeBron, I don't think so either. Right. I don't think that's what they want. So at this point, what are you hanging on to? Why are you overpaying?
You're hanging on to LeBron leaving. Got to at least wait to see. Like, I want to revisit this question when LeBron makes his decision.
All right, that's fine.
But for now, I wouldn't blow it up. And I still think, like, if you get like an OG Anunoby or a Pascal Siakam to burst for you, to really just blossom into your next superstar, I mean, Toronto could be really good. I mean, in the meantime, unless you're Boston or Philadelphia, I guess maybe you could just tank a lot. But I don't know what the other road is. But
let's Toronto's uncertain future impact Miami then?
Well, that leads us to our next question, right? True or false, if they blow it up, is it a bad thing for the Heat?
If they blow it up, is it a bad thing for the Heat? No, I think it's a great thing for the Heat. I think, one, the Vultures will certainly be circling. I can imagine Pat Riley making several calls to Masai Ujiri, and I think trying his best to kind of see if maybe there might be a player in that roster that might fit into Miami, maybe unload another player on Miami's roster in exchange. It depends. You know, I'm not sure that I can't off the top of my head think of any player on Toronto's Raptor that would significantly improve the Heat next season. Although we did have a trade suggestion via Twitter from one of our most steadfast listeners, that's Taylor Monk. He had a couple of suggestions, a three-team trade with the Washington Wizards and the Toronto Raptors.
Does it have DeRozan going to Miami?
I believe that was the nature of
the trade. No, I don't want it. I don't want anything to do with DeMar DeRozan. I don't care what the trade is. Unless it's Whiteside for DeRozan straight up, I don't care. I don't want DeRozan. I don't want DeRozan.
It was not him for him straight up.
Well, then I don't want it.
Let me see what the details were before you go. It's DeRozan and Jan Mahimi from Washington to Miami. Whiteside and Ibaka to the Wizards. Uh-huh. And then the Raptors get Gortat, Dion Waiters, Markieff Morris, Jason Smith, Kelly Oubre Jr., and Rodney Magruder. So Miami would be giving up, in effect, Whiteside, Waiters, and Magruder.
I just don't see how that trade happens. DeRozan is by far the best player involved in that deal.
Suggested including a first-round pick from both Miami in 2019 and the Wizards.
To Toronto? So that would be assuming Toronto blows it. Like, look, if Toronto blows it up, it could very well look like a deal could look like that. I just don't want DeRozan, man. Like, I just...
You know, there might be some benefit. Like, his game is somewhat limited, and I know some people have compared it to Dwayne Wade because he's limited as far as his shooting range is concerned. But seeing how the league has evolved, like, he seems like he's more and more, I don't know about useless, but just those his limitations stand out all the more.
Would you say that he's a dinosaur? Sorry.
DeRozan-saurus Rex, I guess.
DeRozan-saurus. Look, I do think it could be a bad thing for Miami because maybe Toronto decides to blow it up hypothetically, and they and like you said, you get the vultures. Maybe some of those vultures take themselves out of the running for other teams that blow it up. Like, you know, some team goes out and gets DeRozan. Miami doesn't want to get involved with DeRozan, but now that team is no longer in the running for the next superstar that becomes available. Yeah, it could help that way. But I also look at it like if Toronto really tries to dismantle a roster and they put a Valanciunas and a Serge Ibaka and all these guys on the market, that could hurt Hassan Whiteside's market because I think that any team would rather have Valanciunas over Whiteside and maybe even Ibaka over Whiteside, which I'm not sure.
Lot more people would want Ibaka over Whiteside, to be honest.
And that would really, and I just, you add that to an already saturated market of centers, just teams that are trying to rid themselves of those big center contracts, that could hurt them. And so it could be a good and a bad thing. I mean, everything's kind of related in that way. So I don't know. But it would be interesting. And if they do blow it up, maybe, you know, that if the Raptors blow it up completely, that also takes a contender out of the Eastern Conference. And I wouldn't consider the Heat a contender right now, but no. If they get an extra piece, maybe they could be. But look, the Raptors could make a coaching change this summer. They could let Dwayne Casey go. That's an option for them to get better. But we already have some coaching changes around the rest of the league. We'll get to that after this quick break. We'll talk about what the Heat can learn from the Celtics, who are having success in these playoffs later on. But first, let's hear from Matt Shook from Locked On Pistons with an update on the latest involving Stan Van Gundy, and then from Walker Mail of Locked On Hornets on the new head coach in Charlotte.
Hey, this is Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons. But after a month, it finally happened. Stan Van Gundy was fired Monday by the Pistons as coach and president of basketball operations with a rather strange press release by the team where Tom Gores, the owner, and Stan Van Gundy, that Stan wanted to return. Quote, "Stan is a competitor and he wanted to finish the job," Gores said. Not quite sure exactly why Gores needs to be pointing that out. I don't know if that's a dig at Stan Van Gundy or if that's trying to make him look better. It was a strange way of putting that. After 4 years, with 1 year remaining on his contract, Stan will not be coming back. Van Gundy's 4 years featured a rapid ascent to the playoffs in year two after taking over a franchise stuck in the mud, but the last two were obviously disappointing seasons, hindered by reckless free agent misses and draft night head scratchers, most notably taking Luke Kennard over Donovan Mitchell last summer as Mitchell began to, it looks like a starring career that he's going to have with the Utah Jazz. And that one spelled the end of the Stan Van Gundy era. We may never know what happened in the days of California meetings between Gores and Van Gundy that dragged out recently. And why did they drag out so long is the biggest question probably on Pistons fans right now. On the minds, but Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN reported that last week that Gores wanted Stan Van Gundy to stay on as coach but retool the front office structure, but they weren't able to reach that agreement, nor were they able to get into any extension that Stan Van Gundy was likely pining for with only 1 year left in his deal. So Dan will collect $7 million and probably have his pick of television jobs as he's a engaging and compelling personality in front of the microphones. All told, it'll probably be better for him than a lame duck year under a new boss that didn't hire him. So the Pistons joined the coach and executive searches nearly a month after their season ended. Again, why did that take so long? Names like Steve Clifford, Mike Budenholzer, or former Piston Jerry Stackhouse figure to be tossed around in terms of coaching candidates, although this job certainly ranks below division rival Milwaukee in the pecking order of openings. And you can draw your own conclusions as fans and coaches out there about where the Pistons fall in terms of some of these other ones, like the Charlottes or maybe the rebuilding teams such as Atlanta that still have openings as well. Woj of ESPN also reported that former Arntellen client Brent Berry could be involved in the new front office as well. Former Pistons star Chauncey Billups was also attached to the team's front office in a report from Mark Stein of the New York Times earlier this year in January as potentially part of the revamped front office for the Pistons and his former team. The team will move forward with a potentially awkward and injury-prone core of Blake Griffin, Reggie Jackson, and Andre Drummond with little salary cap flexibility and almost assuredly no first-round pick next month. But if there's one thing we can guess about Gores, a Malibu resident who has gravitated more to his glitzy life in California than his Michigan background, it's that he's probably going to want to make a splash. Based on his bidding of Van Gundy away from the Warriors 4 years ago and his at least approval of the Griffin trade this year, he'll be hoping to make that big splash and get the Pistons out there and in a winning position, and especially in the newspapers and on Twitter right away, and hopefully back in the playoffs as quickly as this year. And we will see how that works out for the Detroit Pistons down the road, again, who have fired Stan Van Gundy as coach and president of basketball operations. This is Matt Shook for Locked On Pistons. Thanks for listening.
I'm Walker Mail of the Locked On Hornets podcast. The Charlotte Hornets now have selected James Borrego as their new head coach. Again, this is coming after the Hornets had finalized a couple of head coaching candidates in the Spurs assistant James Borrego and the Celtics assistant Jay Larinaga. Again, Adrian Wojnarowski just reporting that James Borrego would be the new head coach for the Charlotte Hornets. Now, Borrego comes in having had 10 years of experience under Greg Popovich, did serve a short stint with the Orlando Magic under Jacques Vaughn, eventually taking over for him when he was let go by the Magic, and accumulating a 10-20 record as the interim head coach. Of course, Scott Skiles comes in with Orlando to become the new head coach, and Borrego goes back to the San Antonio Spurs to serve under Greg Popovich. Also served under Monty Williams for a brief stint with the New Orleans then Hornets. Monty Williams, of course, coming also from that Greg Popovich tree. So James Borrego has a little bit of head coaching experience as the interim head coach with Orlando, but also a ton of experience under what a lot of people consider to be the best coach in today's NBA and maybe of all time, and Greg Popovich. So Borrego now replaces Steve Clifford, who was fired at the end of this regular season, as Mitch Kupchak, the new general manager of the Charlotte Hornets, came in and decided Steve Clifford's fate. Mitch Kupchak, again, served a long time with the Los Angeles Lakers, about 20 years, and he is at the helm now of the Charlotte Hornets' decision-making as the general manager who now brings in James Borrego. A couple of other questions to go on with the Charlotte Hornets as what their future may look like. You do have Kemba Walker, who was rumored in some trade consideration really before the trade deadline. They held on to him then. It does not mean that he is a surefire thing to stay on this Charlotte Hornets roster, so who knows what Mitch Kupchak decides to do there. You do have, of course, Dwight Howard, who is a guy that is a big man down low that is kind of losing some value in today's NBA, but still carries a hefty contract. You wonder what kind of trading partners the Charlotte Hornets could see there. There's a lot of questions for the Charlotte Hornets team, but one that is no longer a question, they did find the answer, at least of now, and that is James Borrego, the San Antonio Spurs former assistant, now the Charlotte Hornets' new head coach. Again, thanks for listening. I'm Walker Mail on the Locked On Hornets podcast.
As Walker pointed out, there are a lot of questions in Charlotte. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that this offseason in regards to what they do with Kemba Walker, Dwight Howard, etc. But first, let's just go over this Borrego news. What are your thoughts on the Hornets hiring Borrego as their head coach, David?
I think it's an uninspired choice, to be honest with you. I'm not sure that there were any viable options that might have significantly improved Charlotte's offseason. Unfortunately for the Hornets and their fans, they're kind of stuck with the roster they have. I don't see them being able to move any of their high-priced players, and there are a number of them on that roster. And then Borrego, I just don't know what he offers as a coach, and maybe this is the right opportunity for him. He was stuck with a bad Magic team in his limited head coaching experience when he was an interim a few years ago. I think you're kind of looking at the Greg Popovich tree and hoping that the fruit of that tree is all going to be absolutely spectacular. But Jacques Vaughn was not a great coach, and he was from that same tree. In fact, he was the head coach in Orlando when Borrego came in as his assistant there and eventually took over for Vaughn when he was fired. So to me, it just looks like a really bad coach. It seems like a coach that's easy to manipulate and control and have maybe a lesser voice in the locker room or in the front office. Somebody like Steve Clifford, who's been around and has been established and is such a veteran presence, maybe wasn't as easy. And you look at Mitch Kupchak, the new GM for the Hornets. Hell, he hired Byron Scott. I mean, I can't really look to him and say he knew what he was doing as far as hiring coaches in the past. He got lucky with Phil Jackson, who was able to turn around that franchise when there was a lot more talent on the roster. It takes a little bit more of a challenge to find a right coach for a roster that's not particularly good, and that's what the Hornets have.
Yeah, maybe at 41 years old, James Borrego is a little more patient than maybe a Steve Clifford was to deal with a rebuild. So maybe the hiring of Borrego, again a young coach, is a signal that Mitch Kupchak is going to try to rebuild this team, and that might involve trading Kemba Walker to get off some of those other bigger contracts that have basically made a rebuild impossible at this point. I'm with you, though. This just reminds me of kind of like how every other crappy NFL team will just hire a Bill Belichick assistant and just hoping that that person's Bill Belichick can bring, like, that person can bring like 40% of what Bill Belichick can bring to the table. Yeah. And just every time it just doesn't work out, it's just like, that's what this kind of feels like to me. I don't anything against Borrego. I don't know anything. I've never talked to him. I don't know anything about him, but it's probably not his fault. Maybe he's patient enough to deal with a rebuild, and maybe that, and he's got a high capacity to learn on the fly and learn on the job, and maybe that's what you're banking on here. But it's certainly not a step up from Steve Clifford. I think you and I talked about this quite a bit. We didn't think Steve Clifford was the issue there, and I don't think that the Hornets necessarily did either. But again, I think just you parting ways with Clifford, going in a new direction, does signal that there's going to be a rebuild here. So maybe that there's sort of, the kind of, just like you try to develop prospects on a roster, maybe you're trying to develop a head coach as the team rebuilds. But look, the Celtics are a team that tried to rebuild. They got a young head coach in Brad Stevens out of college, and things tended to pop for them. And they're having a lot of success right now in the playoffs. They've made it to the second round. They have a 3-1 lead over the Sixers at the time that we're recording this. And they are, despite having Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward on the roster, they haven't played for them in the playoffs, and they're having success in the playoffs despite not having a superstar. David, do you think that the Celtics are proof that the Heat don't need a superstar to advance in the playoffs?
I think they are an example that you don't need a superstar, but I don't know that that necessarily proves Miami can advance without a superstar. Like, the Heat roster as currently constructed just doesn't play nearly as disciplined or as effectively as Boston's does. And that hurts to say. I don't want to be like the same people who will get on Twitter and rip on Eric Spoelstra and defend Brad Stevens or vice versa. Like, to me, I think Spoelstra's a great coach, and I know you could say a lot about Stevens' lack of postseason success, but you can't argue with the results that he's getting the most out of these players. You could say that maybe the players on the roster have more quote-unquote talent than Miami's does, but still getting them to maximize. Yeah, but getting them to maximize that skill set. Yeah, I mean, it's still beyond talent, though. Like, what is talent? That's like a vague definition.
Oh, jeez. No, we need a whole other podcast to answer that. But I think having a guy like Al Horford, talent regardless, just they have better players than Miami does, and I do. Like, I bring up this question almost as to just sort of answer this. I've seen this question as you're kind of alluding to this. I've seen this a lot online and just people that we interact with and in our mailbag and stuff like that. Like, there should be this expectation that if Boston can do it, Miami could do it. But Al Horford is better than anybody Miami has. Jason Tatum provides a skill set that the Heat don't have on their roster.
Not at all.
I mean, not even with, even if Deion Waiters were healthy, he does not have the same skill set because he doesn't have the same.
Deion Waiters and Wayne Ellington, maybe you might get something close to Tatum.
There you go. Right. And add an extra 2 inches. So, I think that the Celtics are just way more, they have better, way better players than the Heat do. I just go back. Al Horford never gets enough credit. And he is so much. Put Al Horford on the roster. Forget Jason Tatum. Swap Whiteside with Al Horford. Oh. Miami's got a much better chance against the Sixers. I guarantee it. I mean,
oh yeah.
Like, it's, and then you just combine all the other things. I think that Boston is getting this kind of reputation for being superstarless, but Al Horford is a legitimate All Star, not a superstar, but an All Star. And Jason Tatum is a superstar in the making. Like, he is really, really good, and he is playing out of his mind right now. The Heat don't have anybody that's even capable of that. So that's sort of my, I don't think that the Celtics and the Heat are even comparable, even though, so I, I, I disagree with the premise of my question, even though I wrote it.
So Al Horford, though not a superstar, let's assume that, you know, LeBron James, Steph Curry, KD, those players would rank on a scale of 1 to 10, a 10, right? That's fair?
Yeah.
Where does Horford rank in that? 7? 8?
Yeah, I was going to put 7.
Okay. So where the best player in Miami's roster, where do they rank?
I'd say it's Goran Dragic, and he's a 6.
And that's probably really generous too, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, what if an average point guard, I guess, is 5? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
then he's above average. I would say he's a 6. Yeah. And then Whiteside is a 1. Because I hate that guy. I'm done.
Well, get used to it because he's doing push-ups in the sand. So that means he's going to be
And he didn't have good form on the push-ups. I was looking at him like, dude, I could do a better push-up than that. And I'm not bragging about my push-ups. I'm just saying, I am not an NBA player. And you should, just because you do push-ups in the sand, does not mean that you have any idea where you should be positioned on defense. And that doesn't help your hook shot, which is already terrible in the first place. So
no, it's going to help him when he's camped out in the three-point corner, though. That's what he wants, right? Or that's what he's arguing against. He doesn't want to be put in the corner. Nobody puts baby Whiteside in the corner. And
this is classic Whiteside, misdiagnosed, like mistroubleshooting every problem. Like, he's just like, instead of me trying to be better at playing in small ball games, you should put me in there and let me post up and let me hit more of my jump shots and my hook shots.
Or take more, because there's certainly no guarantee he'll hit them. But
that's true. All right, well, that's all we have for today before we go down that Whiteside rabbit hole. We'll be back tomorrow. Send us your questions and comments by emailing us at lockedonheat@gmail.com or using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, well.